And it's great when you can see them thriving with ADHD and their self-esteem and their self-worth intact. That's just an awesome thing to see as a parent.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. We just finished an episode on The Lisa Show about strategies for parenting kids with ADHD. It's super helpful, and I hope you'll listen to it. Today's episode isn't necessarily a part two, but you can think of it as a documentary from the trenches from ADHD parenting. You'll hear diagnosis stories, mistakes, successes, life hacks, and really great advice. If you're an ADHD parent, today's episode is going to make you feel validated and empowered. And even if your kid doesn't have ADHD, listening to these mothers' stories, I guarantee you'll come away with plenty of parenting inspiration. We're all parenting together. ADHD is becoming such a common occurrence that I wonder if it now sits on the shelf of things like high interest rates and having a dozen streaming services just so you can watch your favorite shows. Yeah, it's not ideal, but what are you gonna do? I don't know. Has ADHD become so normalized that we're forgetting that ADHD is hard and complicated and a daily concern? It is still very much a struggle in my home, and it's something that seems to affect every corner of my kids' lives. When it comes to topics like this, I've found that it's best to sit down with friends and get real with each other, the tell it to me straight and what do I need to know kind of conversations. Well, that's what we're going to do today. I'm going to introduce you to Amy, Stacy, and Lori, three moms I know who are all in different states and different stages of life. They also all happen to be parents of kids with ADHD. I've asked them to share their experience without holding back any punches. You'll hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. But you'll also hear a lot of hope, help, and heck yes in their stories too. Life wasn't meant to be experienced alone, and neither was ADHD. So I'm going to turn it over to the moms and let them tell you about their journeys with ADHD parenting. They all begin, and this wasn't planned on my part, with parents that also had ADHD. Here's Lori.
I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, where there's no such thing as ADHD or ADD, but I always knew there was something odd about me. So, I am an ADD parent of ADD and ADHD children, but that wasn't a thing. There was no thing. There was no diagnosis. There were no meds. You just felt like a failure all the time. You just felt like you were drowning. So, I come to it with a few issues. I am a parent with attentional issues, raised by a man with attentional issues who he, as a child of the 40s and 50s, there were no advocates. He was the child who sat in the corner wearing the dunce cap, right? Makes you cringe, doesn't it? I have three kids, two of which have attentional issues, but they manifested differently, so much so that I didn't know the first one had attentional issues because she's wired so much like me. Actually, the second one is in different ways. So the techniques that worked for me to succeed in my life, and I wasn't diagnosed until adulthood. I just figured, you know, it was in hindsight. We went, oh, well, no wonder. No wonder we're having these issues. So first of all, parents, if there's a parent listening, and if you're struggling and you get and can resonate with what your child is doing, do you need to go and get a diagnosis? No, but consider for yourself, they're struggling and you're struggling too, and you can solve this together.
The genetic component is a common one. Lori has at least three generations of it in her family. But what Amy didn't realize until a little while ago is that she also had ADHD. It looks different for her.
I looked up all this stuff and I was like, what in the world? I think I have ADHD. It really surprised me because I don't have the classic, like, you know, I was never hyperactive, that kind of thing. But I have all the other executive function challenges and all that kind of stuff. It had a lot to do with deadlines, that urgency around deadlines and the inability to prepare. I mean, I felt like I had truly an inability to plan ahead. I could cognitively think about it. Like, I know this needs to be done. I can see what it looks like, but I could not do it. I could not do it. I had this sort of a household coach for a little while, and she was trying to help me plan meals. And she really held my feet to the fire. Like, no, we're going to plan what is for dinner for the next 2 weeks. And it was so painful for me. I couldn't understand what was so difficult about that for me. There was also a piece of emotional sensitivity. I've always been emotionally sensitive, and that is a real common factor in ADHD that I didn't realize at all. So that was a huge reveal for me to think, oh my goodness, that explains a lot of my stuff. These are things that I felt a lot of shame about. You know, I felt like I am not a capable adult. Whatever messages people were getting about becoming an adult, I missed it. I felt like I really was like not a good adult and didn't know how to do all these basic things that seemed like part of being an adult and being a mom, being well-organized, being able to have an idea and then follow it through all the way to the end, that kind of stuff. So it was healing in that way that I got to address a lot of that shame that I felt. I say this often, knowing that you have ADHD or your child has ADHD, it's not an excuse, but it's an explanation. And that was really helpful for me.
I find it fascinating that each of these women have a family connection to ADHD. According to a study done by the NIH, 74% of ADHD cases they studied were genetically inherited. Now, that doesn't mean that every ADHD child will have an ADHD parent, but it's certainly an interesting connection. Stacy's son probably inherited his ADHD from his dad, who has ADHD, but his diagnosis wasn't an obvious one because he didn't look like the typical ADHD kid.
I wish I had known that ADHD looks different for everyone. I have a son who is the most chill and mellow kid ever. He never cried as a baby. He never ran away from me as a toddler. He's always been able to sit still and play quietly. So he didn't have some of those traditional hallmarks that I think we think of with kids with ADHD. He wasn't hyperactive. He got good grades. He could sit still. So I don't think he appeared to have ADHD to his teachers. But there were other signs that I noticed. And so I took him to the doctor to see what the doctor thought. And as we were sitting there and the doctor was talking to us, my son was probably in sixth grade at the time. He had a notebook and he sat there and he wrote out the first 40 digits of pi. He was working on memorizing pi. And then he finished that and then he pulled his Rubik's Cube out of his pocket and then was just timing himself solving it. I would just say ADHD looks different for everyone.
ADHD has looked a lot different in each one of my kids. I want to protect their privacy in what the specific characteristics are, but let me just say that with a lot of time in parenting and getting to know my kids, mostly through their struggles and trying to figure out how I can help them best, I've realized that their symptoms are different. The stereotypical ADHD, you know, bouncing off the walls, not being able to sit still or keep focus, has been certainly true for a couple of my kids, but not all of them. Some of it has showed up in time blindness, hyperfixation, a sort of sensitivity to perceived rejection. And those kinds of characteristics seem overwhelming when you're trying to help your kid. Because I am not neurodivergent, trying to identify my kids' ADHD characteristics seemed overwhelming because I didn't understand it. It's not how my brain works. But because Lori was already familiar with her own ADHD symptoms, when she saw her son struggling in school, it was emotional and familiar.
I've got 3 great kids. I was a really great parent for that first child. Actually, I was a really great parent until I had children, then I became an idiot. Second child comes along and sweet, energetic, but a different energy. Impulsive. Now, again, we're impulsive, we're energetic. We can hang with that. We can hold our own with a child who's going here and there. We have to adjust our expectations. But when I saw that he was suddenly showing up like a square peg in a round hole in school, Then it became a problem. His name is Joshua, and he was also extremely bright. So this is the kid who tested off the charts, who was done with his whole, you know, assignments first, and then would get into trouble because he was bored. Now it's third grade. And in those days, teachers were not allowed to recommend anything. They were not allowed to say, you know, I think your kid has an issue, but I'm volunteering in the classroom. And she would point out, you know, there'd be a table of kids working, and then there would be my kid sticking out like a sore thumb. Now, he was done with his work. And what's he doing? He's tearing paper. He's chewing paper. He's fidgeting. He's just uncomfortable in his skin. And she said, I just want you to notice. And she would ask me, is he like this at home? And I'm like, well, yeah. She's like, okay. And it does how is he at home? I was like, he's great, okay. She was asking questions that got me to looking at my kid. He's funny, he's expressive, and he's impulsive, and he doesn't have self-control. He doesn't self-regulate. And by the way, he's bugging other kids. So now he's that kid who gets picked on. He's the kid who gets bullied. I know that kid because I was that kid. And so I, as a parent, feel hopeless. It stirs up, triggers all of my stuff because the last thing you want is your child to have the same issues that you had. We're not talking about give me your lunch money bully. We're talking the looks, the whispers, the silent treatment, the exclusion, the roll their eyes, the grunt, all the looks. You see the energy and it's like, okay, I need to do something to help him help himself to get along in this world and to be successful.
Doesn't that just break your heart? You know what they're talking about. The looks, the rolled eyes, the bullying, the being left out, the marginalized. Oh, it's the last thing that any parent really wants for their kids. They want better. They want to help them navigate these difficult social situations. And we see down the line, is that going to mean isolation? Is that going to mean that they don't have friends and that they're not going to be happy? And then what else? And we're adding so much of our own experience and emotion to it. It feels like so much is hard to navigate. And what tipped Amy off that something might be wrong with her son wasn't his behavior in school. It was different. It was his declining mental health. And it wasn't until she took him to the pediatrician that ADHD diagnosis started falling into place.
So our pediatrician recommended this podcast about rejection sensitivity dysphoria, RSD, that can be a big part of life for people with ADHD. This extra sensitivity when something happens that just feels devastating to kids or to adults, your emotional response is out of proportion to the hurt. And we saw that so much in our son and thought, oh my gosh, is this explanation finally for this behavior that had been baffling and so challenging, right? We saw how hurt he would get about things. And it was so sad to watch and so hard to understand. And so that was incredibly helpful and powerful. And then looking back, other things made a lot of sense. Like, you know, having to ask him so many times to complete a task, doing chores, whether it was chores or homework, his inattentiveness, his first grade teacher said something like, he's always looking out the window, his mind is in the clouds, you know. I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that tracks, you know, this emotional sensitivity, the challenge with following through on things, a lack of interest in anything that isn't personally interesting. You know, that desire for novelty, it was so helpful to realize that. Like, novelty is essential for people with ADHD. And so no wonder he doesn't care about school or his homework, because that is not a topic that interests him. That's not a task that interests him. But then we would see him do these things, like work so hard and stay so committed on tasks he cared about. And that's partly about novelty and partly about selective focus. Like, he can focus, but he has to care about it. And that was so helpful to learn too as a parent. Like, it's not a character flaw. It's not that he doesn't want to work hard in school. It's just that he cannot muster the interest in something that doesn't interest him.
Receiving an ADHD diagnosis for their kids was actually a relief to each of these moms because it allowed them to wrap their heads around what was going on with their child. It didn't necessarily make things easier, but it did make things more understandable. And since then, many things have improved for these moms. Here's what Stacy noticed.
Recognizing that my ADHD kids needed more scaffolding and support and to be okay with that has taken time. I had to tell myself that it's okay that my high schooler may need a reminder to study for an upcoming test or to turn in his essay. It's not a failure on either of our parts for me to help them be successful. So once I accepted that they needed that extra support, things didn't slip through the cracks. And I saw an improvement in their self-esteem because they were getting good grades and we were all happier and less frustrated.
Amy says that knowing that her son has ADHD has helped her to reframe his behavior and her own.
I think I have become more patient as an ADHD parent, whereas before I felt like, come on, let's get this done. Let's go. Like, what is happening here? Why are you not responding? I've asked you to do something. Do it. I just have more understanding that there is a space between the stimulus, my request or the requirement, and the time it will get completed. So I think that is something that I've gotten better at, is just understanding that this is not a kid who's trying to be willful or disobedient or even objectionable. They're just on their own path, using their own unique brain to answer my question or to respond to my request or to, you know, finish their chores. That's the piece I've improved upon. Not easy still, but having that piece of understanding and empathy, like this is really what's happening in their brain, has been a huge game changer.
For Lori, the ADHD wins were noticeable, but not all at once.
It was never a dramatic change. It's fluid. And there are good days and there are bad days and there are mediocre days. And most days are neutral. Most days are mundane and unmemorable. I think looking back, I can look at the total trajectory and go, oh, I got better every day. I didn't feel like I was getting better. As a parent, if you're in it, you win. And you're going to look back one day and go, oh, before I was this and now I'm this, but you might not know the change is happening. There was no one day that I woke up and went, I've got it. I've got the solution. Today, I'm going to be a great ADHD parent. Instead, over time, I just needed better tools and I needed more grace for myself, more grace for the kids without letting them off the hook. I needed to have them do more and me do less. And that's what got better over time. Because early on, I was what I'd call overcorrecting. I see a problem, I have to fix this problem so it never happens again. And if it happens again, I'm the problem. But there was a time when I finally felt like we've hit our stride. I've got this now. That doesn't mean it was all easy from that moment on. It meant I no longer felt like it was falling apart if we had a bad day or a bad moment.
Not everything is sunshine and roses for these moms, but they have learned a lot along the way. And as for me, having a diagnosis and working through hard things and being able to really discover how your child thinks and how their brain works has made me see them better as individuals. And when you see somebody better, it helps you love them better. It's been one win, but there's always a lot of progress to be made too. I wanted every single piece of advice that these moms could think of to help the rest of us in the thick of ADHD parenting. Well, this is what Stacy had to say.
When my son first started high school, I was driving him home and I asked him what homework he had. And he closed his eyes and he put his fingers to his temple and he said, "Let me check my mind planner." So needless to say, that was not a foolproof way to remember your assignments and your tests. And things were slipping through the cracks a little bit. So something that I did to help my kids with ADHD is they are expected to write down any homework or upcoming tests in each class. If they don't have anything, then they have to write none. So I know that they at least acknowledge that. And then when they get home, I pull out a notebook that I keep in the kitchen and They read to me their assignments and their tests, and I write down every assignment and when it's due and tests and when the date is for that. That way I can help remind them of assignments or tests to study for, and also to follow up and make sure that they've turned things in, because it was not uncommon for them to do an assignment but just forget to turn it in the next day. So I had to follow up with that. Something that have found hugely beneficial is every Sunday, we pull up their grades and take a look and just make sure they're not missing any assignments. And if there's a test they didn't do as well on as they would have liked, I encourage them to ask their teacher about doing a makeup test or earning extra points. Doing this once a week is so helpful because they can never get too far behind. And I think sometimes ADHD kids, if they get behind, they get overwhelmed and they just really have a hard time catching up. And honestly, they want to do well. We don't need to come down too hard on them as parents because they are hard enough on themselves. So I think that having that accountability is important, but also having support is just as important for kids with ADHD. I mean, they want to be successful as much as we want them to be successful. And it's great when you can see them thriving with ADHD and their self-esteem and their self-worth intact. That's just an awesome thing to see as a parent.
Lori says games, timers, transitions, and praise have been hugely helpful for her kids.
Number one, we made many things games. And a game not to compete against each other, but to do better than we did last time. So imagination and play was already in our household. But it was, oh no, the queen is coming. If she sees that all of our clothes are on the floor, she's going to put us in the dungeon. We only have 30 seconds to see how many we can pick up because there's a dragon at the door. Ready, set, go. So we play games, and there's no winning or losing. If we're dealing with kids who are imaginative and creative, let's play with them where they are. Who says that work has to be work? We have jobs to do, and we make our jobs fun. I don't want them to resist and resent having to work for the rest of their lives. I'm setting a timer because one of the things with that neurodivergent brain is time blindness. Some people would interpret that ADHD is only about you can't focus on anything. That's not it. It's hyper-focusing. It's getting locked into something and not being able to get out of it. And that was one of the ways that it manifested in my household. It wasn't just that they couldn't focus on anything. It's they couldn't stop focusing on something to focus on other things that needed their attention. So timers would bring us back into the present. And to this day, I use timers for myself because I can get sucked into a project to the detriment of everything else on my to-do list. It's good to give transitions. Transitions are really important. Hey, so-and-so, I know you're reading. I'm going to set the timer because in 5 minutes, we're putting the books away, we're putting our shoes on, and we're leaving. And if you want your children to not have too many issues with time blindness, you want to make sure you set the timers and then mean it. Actually do it. One of the things that worked for us is that specific positive reinforcement will give you greater gains than just praising your child meaninglessly, going, good job, you're great. Now, we all need positive messages, but non-specific praise doesn't give your child anything to build on. And for, I'd say, every brain, but especially for my own children, when I can say, wow, you did that all by yourself, or wow, you came to me when you had questions, you solved that problem. Hey, I was having a rough morning and seeing that you did that has really lifted my spirits today. And hey, you put your clothes away, you folded those. I love that you wake up with a smile each day. You know, whatever the specific things are that they can replicate, whatever they're in control of, that's what you can reinforce. And the more specific it is, the more you're going to get it again and again.
Amy says to invest in a good pediatrician and in your kids' quirks.
Finding a great pediatrician who sees your kid and knows your kid who has some experience with ADHD has been huge for us. I understand not everyone wants to medicate their kids. It's a huge decision and worth investigating. And the first medication might not be the right medication. And so sometimes it's worth sticking around to see what else might be a good fit. There are a lot of great resources around diet, movement, things like stimulating your cerebellum with balance can make a big difference for kids with ADHD. So there are elements of medication and also natural remedies, and sometimes a combination of both things. Another thing I would say is really listening to your kids, their little quirks. Like when my son was younger and we didn't know he had ADHD yet, and he said to me, please only tell me one thing at a time that I need to do. He knew what he needed. And so now our third son always wants music on. And sometimes it drives me crazy, but then I realize that's something that's actually really helping him. So I think listening to our kids would be one hack. Like, what is their preferred way of doing things? Can we accommodate that? Is that reasonable?
If I could just add my two cents here. When I've tried different approaches, either to getting tasks done or to talking about difficult things, I have learned to not be so discouraged if one thing doesn't work, to try lots of different things. And just because one thing works for a little while doesn't mean that it will always work, and to not take things so personally. I've also learned to lay all my cards out, to explain to my children, hey, this is what I'm trying to do when I say this, or I'm just trying to understand how your brain works, and I don't want to bug you, but I also want to be a support and an encouragement to you. So that's why I am trying this approach, this game, timer, transition, whatever it is. At the end of the day, what has worked for all of us has been the result of a lot of trial and error. In each case, it's been less about finding the perfect system and more about just trying systems on for size. Those systems will inevitably need to evolve. I mean, remember that ADHD brains crave novelty. The key is to not give up. Here are two parting thoughts from Lori and Amy for every ADHD parent out there that brought me a lot of hope.
What I wish I would have known is that everything was going to be fine, because everything is going to be fine. There's an old quote that says, everything's going to be okay in the end. And if it's not okay, that's okay. It's not the end. I was so worried that he was going to think he was broken. I was so worried that if I didn't fix it, whatever it was now, that he was never going to turn into a productive, resilient, contributing member of society, or that he would never know how great he actually was. So what I wish I would have known is that I'm okay, and he's okay, and everything's going to be okay. And I'm going to take it one day at a time, because yes, the future matters, but today matters.
Remember, it's not about you. Your child's behavior is not about you. I think early on, there was a lot of feeling that I was doing a bad job as a mom because my kid was having such a hard time. What I wish I had known is knowing how to manage my own emotions around it and how to separate his responses from my value as a mother. If you're just experiencing this and you're a young mom worried about your kid, there are so many options and possibilities and opportunities. There's a ton of support, more than there ever has been, for a parent who's raising a child with ADHD and for a child with ADHD. These kids are just precious, special, unique, and have a different way of seeing the world.
Our kids aren't broken, and neither are we, even if we feel like we're not doing as well at this parenting thing as we had hoped. I've often heard the phrase that life is a test, and I used to think of it as a grueling multiple choice exam where every decision I made hung in the balance, but not anymore. Instead, I think of life as an experiment where we're all just trying to figure out what works in this lab of life. It's creative, it's ever evolving, and it requires some trial and error. I'm so grateful to Lori, Amy, and Stacy for sharing their experience. Every kid is different, and ADHD has a myriad of presentations, so we may have to pioneer some of our own trials to find solutions that fit for our families. But please know that when you do step into that lab of life, day after day, year after year, there are a lot of parents standing with you and cheering you on as we continue to do our own testing. And in the words of inventor Buckminster Fuller, there is no such thing as a failed experiment. Just unexpected outcomes. So here's to more testing.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Erica Price with help from Becca Hurley-Long, Blake Morse, and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. A special thanks to our guests today, Lori Hurley, Stacey Morse, and Amy Hackworth. Don't miss out on two other great podcasts from the Lisa Show family, The Council of Moms and Proofread, a new book review podcast to help you read more of what you love. You can find The Council of Moms and Proofread on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for your messages. We read them all. And thanks for listening.
I want to recommend another BYU radio podcast you're going to love. It's called Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us. It's brand new, and it has video as well as audio. So if you're someone who wants to engage with others on important topics but aren't sure how, or maybe you're burned out on social media and wish you could bring some humanity back into the discussions online or in real life, then Uncomfy is just for you. You'll hear stories of real people in challenging moments who chose to stick with the discomfort. And in the process, they healed their communities or learned to talk about what really matters to them or simply started to view others with more empathy. Isn't that what we all need? You can do it too. New episodes of Uncomfy, Sticking with Moments That Challenge Us, drop every Wednesday. And you can listen or watch on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.